This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He joins us every Monday in the 12 o'clock hour, and we cover a broad range of topics, and the same is true today. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
So, Guy, let's start off with merchants now adding credit card surcharges to your bill, and there's different amounts for different credit cards, and I guess you get points if you use your credit card, but what are they worth? And so what should folks be contemplating?
Well, it's an interesting new dynamic. Back in the day, MasterCard and Visa used to prohibit surcharges. If you accepted MasterCard or Visa, you could not charge a surcharge. That changed. Congress passed a different rule. So now, in some states, including Louisiana, you can charge a surcharge. The problem for consumers is, well, when should you pay the surcharge and when should you pay cash? And it really boils down to what you're doing with your credit card. Most people like to accumulate miles, primarily with the airlines. And so you have to look at what are the airline miles actually worth. And the challenge with airline miles is if you use them, if you accumulate the miles and use them within a year or two, they're worth between 1.5 cents and two cents per mile. So when you think about that value, it's 2 pennies for $100 or 1.5 pennies. But a real key is it's very important for consumers to use their airline miles. One of the things that merchants like, one of the things that airline frequent flyer companies like, is what they call breakage. And what that means is you accumulate a certain number of miles on different airlines, but you never have enough to make a trip, and so basically they go unused. For the airlines, that's pure profit. For the credit card company, pure profit. For the consumer, pure loss. And so consumers are faced with the challenge, you know, should I pay a surcharge and or should I accumulate miles? And a rough guideline is anything more than 2%, you're better off paying in cash. You know, this is an odd thing. We keep talking about going to a cashless society, and now we're pushing backwards. And I saw this on a merchant that I normally use, and they wanted a 3.5% surcharge. And it made me start thinking, well, is that really worthwhile? And, of course, the answer is no. And if you're paying off your credit card bill every month, it's better off to, take the points if they're free. But if they're not free, and you're suddenly paying 3.5% for something that's worth 1.5% to 2%, it really doesn't make sense to do that. So it changes the dynamic, and there are a lot of other things consumers need to look at when they consider points these days, but The new surcharges are certainly something that changes the way you want to look at these things.
So, what is the range now of these surcharges? I thought they were all like right around that 3.5% to 4.5%.
Yeah, you see them typically 375. You know, the normal retail strategies, you want to stay right below an even amount. So rather than 4, it's 370, 380. I haven't seen any above 4, but a lot of between 3 and 375. And at that price, you're paying more than your points are worth. And I think most consumers should realize you have to be very careful with your points. I mean, they're not something that you can save. Points actually go down in value. You're not going to earn interest on points. And one of the unfortunate things about credit card airline programs is the points have been devalued over time. So as time goes by, you need more points to travel. And then you also end up with blackout dates where if you want to travel at certain holiday times, you can't use it. Certain flights, you can't use it. I remember my wife was planning a trip, and I looked at the trip, and it had two stops. It's like, who wants to do that? There was a direct flight, same airline, but they were trying to route us through two different stops because those were empty seats. And if you're using points, you don't always get the best routing. So it's important for consumers to realize the points are only worth something if you use them. If you let them accumulate and don't use them, you really have wasted your effort. So it'd be better to consider, are you going to use airline points? You're going to use travel points where you stay at a hotel. But the new surcharge thing has definitely made it important for consumers to shop and to think, okay, anything above 3, you should probably pay cash instead of using your credit card.
And I think a lot of retail outlets now, too, are putting a minimum tip on there because I think once people recognize that they're paying the surcharge, what they do is they back that out of the tip, right?
Yeah, and you're also seeing a service fee. And I think this may be a case where merchants may be hurting themselves. A long time ago, I taught a course at Tulane, and I had my students take their credit card and go to their favorite restaurant, which was no problem because these were Tulane students with money. I said, okay, bring in your bills. And then the next week I said, all right, I want you to go back, but this time you cannot bring your credit card. It can't even be in your wallet. You have to only bring cash and then bring the bills. And they all said, look, we know what you're trying to do. We know. I said, I understand, and y'all are smart kids, but just do it anyway. Every single bill was smaller. And I asked them in class, I said, why did you spend less when you had cash? And they said things like, why am I going to pay $3 for coffee? I can get coffee back on campus. That's ridiculous. I'm not paying that amount. So why did you skip iced tea? Same thing. You didn't order a dessert or app. Well, no, they were overpriced. The reason credit cards are so popular is that people spend more money with a credit card because it doesn't seem real. I think this surcharging...
You're deferring the pain. It's deferred pain.
Oh, yeah,
pain,
you are. Right? And it doesn't seem painful. And so you think, oh, this is great. And I think one of the dangers is if merchants impose a surcharge and people go back to cash, they'll actually spend less money. So it's a nice strategy. It seems attractive. It may appear to be a way to cut cost. But I think in the long run, when people are paying with real cash in their wallet, I think they'll spend less money. For one reason, you tend to carry less cash.
Well, you know that the miles have been devalued when a lot of the credit card companies are now giving you one of the benefits of the card is double points at restaurants and hotels if you pay for it on their credit card, right? And you get double the points. So you know they're not really worth as much as they once were. Because I even have a credit card that gives you triple the points. If you use it at certain places or certain brand hotels.
Yeah, and it gets back to that point of they know that there's going to be a certain amount of breakage where people don't use the points. They know that over time, all of the programs have been devalued. So the points are less valuable and really buy less than they used to. So the credit card companies can afford to do it. Sometimes it's a seasonal promotion where they're trying to stimulate business and they do it in conjunction with a restaurant. But typically it's just something to attract attention and get people to spend a little bit more. Because if you're a credit card company, you don't make money if people don't use the card.
Yeah. But that's not been a problem historically in this country, right?
No, it hasn't. And look, I remember back in the day when you could get credit cards as a college student. I got a credit card and, you know, I told my date, who's now become my wife, I said, this is great. We can go out to eat. We've got money. Well, we didn't have money. I had a card that meant I was going to have to pay later plus interest. And when my parents found out I'd gotten a credit card, they said, have you lost your mind? You don't have extra money to do that. So, you know, it really does affect your thinking. And it seems like it's free when you're using the credit card. And, of course, it isn't. And if you're carrying a balance and paying interest, oh, my goodness, because a lot of the credit card interest rates are very high in the 20s and 30s.
And this goes back decades, because I remember my dad saying, how in the hell did you get a credit card? I said, I've got three.
There was a time when if you're a college student, they were giving them out on campus. And thank goodness they don't do that anymore. But, yeah, I mean, I was very susceptible. I mean, I can take this and go to a restaurant or bar and get food and drinks right now. Absolutely, I want one.
I remember the look on his face like it was yesterday. That's one. I got three of those babies.
Yeah.
Because when you have no income, to speak of. I said, well, I don't know.
Yeah, and it sounded like your family reacted the way mine did. It's like, no, this is a terrible idea. You need to cut that up right now.
I think I did end up cutting up two of them, quite frankly, after I saw his reaction. It was like, I'm destined for trouble. I can tell you that right now. And he's not going to bail me out, right? So.
Oh, yeah. No, I knew that. I knew I was not going to have the parents pay my credit card bill. So, yeah, it was time to get rid of the credit card and go back to cash, which amazingly reduced the amount of money I spent each month, which is the whole point.
But what's interesting, too, is that there are some businesses that actually won't take cash. And it's not like just a festival, because like Jazz Fest this year was credit card only, French Quarter Fest, credit card only. And I understand why they're going down that route. It's just a lot easier for them to deal with all of that. But you go to other places, no, we don't take cash. It's like, what?
Yeah, we're cashless only. And fortunately, if you're cashless only, you can't charge a surcharge. You have to give people an option. If there's not a cash option, you can't charge the surcharge. Now, for things like festivals, they're looking at two things. They want to speed up processing so people go through the line fast. And they also want to make sure they're collecting all the sales tax so that they're not getting in trouble with the authorities. So it makes sense for those things to go cashless. But if you get stuck in a situation where they're going cashless and you don't have a credit card, that really is a challenge. And, you know, there are people that are running into financial trouble right now and losing access to credit. And you really don't want them to also lose access to things like festivals and events because they have poor credit scores.
Yeah. All right, let's get to a break, and we'll start with the GDP shrinking in the first quarter, and are we in a recession? We'll start there with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and...
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is. With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going on. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Texlon. The last reports revealed that the GDP shrank in the first quarter of this year. And the question is, are we in a recession? We're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. That seems to be the question that everyone is asking, Guy.
Yeah, and the short answer is right now, no, but we could be. Could be in the future. And the reason is the first quarter was a little bit anomalous, and economists like that word because it just means it was different, but actually every quarter is a bit different than every other. But what happened in the first quarter is anxiety about tariffs caused merchants and manufacturers to front load their purchases of foreign goods. And the definition of GDP is consumption plus government expenditures plus investment, and then the net of imports, exports. Well, that net number was significantly negative in the first quarter because people were ordering in advance, figuring that tariffs were going to cause things to be more expensive. So absent the front loading of tariffs, GDP would have been positive, and you know, we wouldn't be talking about the potential recession. The challenge and the reason people are nervous is there are a lot of things that are on the bubble right now. There's an index economists like to use called the leading economic indicators, and it started the year, actually ended last year at 101.6. It's now 100.5. Anything below 100 indicates that things are slowing down. So the trend has been from 101.4, 101.2, 100.5, so it's trending downwards. The manufacturing index is pretty concerning. It started the year at 50.9. Anything above 50 is expansion. 50.3 in February, 49 in March, 48.7 in April. So when you look at leading index manufacturing, you think things may be headed toward a slowdown. And the area that is more concerning is trucking. The peak of trucking hiring was July of 2022. And year over year, the number of people that are working in the trucking and transportation industry has shrunk by 3%. Well, everything that we use gets shipped somehow, either by rail, air, or truck. So when transportation hiring goes down, you begin to think there may be a sign of a shrinkage. Now, the classic, on the other hand, employment's still up. We had a good hiring month in April, so that actually went up. So 177,000 people gained jobs in April. So you think, that's a good thing.
What categories?
Some in government, some in healthcare, none in manufacturing. So that certainly presents a challenge for the economy going forward. If we're focusing on manufacturing, we're not getting there yet. And I think one of the challenges is, anytime you're looking at increasing manufacturing, that's a long lead time. It takes a long time to locate a factory. It takes a long time to get permits and then to build it. So it's basically a very long while before you increase manufacturing in the U.S. Services, on the other hand, you can push up pretty quickly.
In the area of healthcare, because that's been one of the largest contributors to the job numbers as well as government, do we know whether or not we've reached our pre-pandemic levels in healthcare yet? Because there were a lot of layoffs during the pandemic because of the shutdown of almost everything.
They were. Healthcare has come back because that was the one area that did not get shut down during the pandemic.
Totally, obviously, right. In the peripheral, some of the areas they took.
It was a health issue. So we're not seeing a cutback in employment because of the pandemic. The other thing that's interesting, I mean, we've had the DOGE cuts, but we're still at more government employees than when President Trump was in office the last time. So, you know, they have been cuts. They have been in the news, but the numbers are not as significant as a percent, less than 10% reduction in government employees. And that's only on the federal level. State level has continued to improve.
Guy, the other day, I think it might have been UPS, 71 or 72 distribution centers, and I forgot the number. Was it 20,000 employees they were laying off, or 10,000? Do you recall?
Yeah, and I don't remember the number, but UPS was a challenge because what's happening is there was an exemption called the small package exemption, the de minimis exemption that allowed China to send packages worth less than $800 into the U.S. tariff-free. And that volume had been growing very dramatically. And because of the tariffs and the elimination of the de minimis exemption, Temu and Shein, which are the two big exporters from China, have both said they're not going to be able to do that anymore. They're going to have to ship from local sources or ship from different countries. So if you're UPS and you're moving a lot of that, you now don't have that ability. So that's one of the things that's changing and making a big difference.
So obviously then we're still waiting to see the complete and total impact of these tariffs. They've changed too. So I don't know that I'm not sure what we're going to see. I mean, it just kind of makes it even more confusing, right?
Yeah. Scott Bessin, who's the Treasury Secretary, was on Bloomberg this morning. And what he said, and I hope he's right, is they're talking, we have basically 18 big trading partners, including China. He said the 17 other than China have been in discussions with the U.S. They hope to have trade deals worked out as soon as this week. And I think one of the things that could push the U.S. into a recession is continued uncertainty. If we don't know what's going on, companies will sit on their hands. They won't make expansion plans. They won't make new investments. If we create certainty and we know for sure, okay, these are the tariffs going forward, that will go a long way toward stabilizing the economy because then people can plan. You know, it's essentially impossible to plan when you don't know what the rules are going to be. So I hope he's right in that we will begin to have tariff deals and certainty starting this week. So that's what he said this morning, and I'm counting on that being accurate because it would be very valuable. Now, apparently China is a whole different story, and you know, there are a lot of different things go up in the air in that negotiation, including their support for Russia and the war in Ukraine, their violation of the sanctions, and a number of other things. So that could be a much longer-term thing. But if we work out trade deals with 17 out of 18, that would provide a lot of certainty and would go a long way toward stabilizing the economic outlook as we go forward.
Best that we can tell, Have we seen an impact in China yet or no?
Oh, yeah. China is an interesting country. It has large scale. And one of the things China's done that makes people very nervous is they have quit publishing economic statistics. And so a number of the statistics that people relied upon, like youth unemployment, are no longer available. So that's not a sign that things are going great. That's a sign that they don't want to put those numbers out in public. China also has a big overhang in their property market and a tremendous challenge demographically in that their workforce is aging fairly rapidly, and they really... You know, we talk about immigration, but there's essentially no net immigration into China. That's not a place that people want to go work. So they're seeing factory slowdowns. They're seeing increased unemployment. Some of the estimates are over 20% for the cohort of 20-year-olds. And there's even a phrase for it. I can't say it in Chinese, but it's in English, it means to lie flat. And the Chinese 20-year-olds are saying, just not going to try and get a job. It's too hard. I can't get a permit to move into the city. So I'm just going to lie flat or lay about and do nothing. So their economy is challenged. The difference is they don't run for election. So President Xi does not have to run for election. There aren't opinion polls each month on how he's doing. And so... He can endure a lot of turmoil, and he seems to be willing to endure a lot of turmoil. He's also on the sort of positive side. He's sort of loving the war in Ukraine because it's essentially making Russia a subsidiary of China. They're having to sell China oil and gas at a discount. They're having to allow China access to minerals and water and timber in Siberia. So they're... Russia's almost becoming a colony because of their desperate need for support. So that's offsetting some of the challenges that the tariffs are causing. But there's for sure pressure in China. And the challenge is they really don't have to respond to economic pressure like we do because they don't have elections every 2 and 4 years. In fact, they have no elections.
Yeah. How does that... You know, the immigration thing is kind of interesting. I pulled up some old data that I had, and it was an old Gallup poll, about 4 years old, maybe. I don't recall. It was not that old. And it revealed that 900 million adults worldwide would leave their country if they could. And 20% of them, roughly 160 million, would move to the United States tomorrow. And the rest were spread out amongst a bunch of different countries, China not being one of them. I mean, you know, nobody wants to go to.
No, I mean, it's a very difficult place. And, you know, we talk about prejudice. There's a lot of prejudice against non-Chinese in China. So if you're not native Chinese, it's very difficult to make your way in China these days. One of the great things that has helped the U.S. through the years is our attraction of the best and brightest from around the world. We are a destination country. People do want to come here. They see us as a land of opportunity. I'm very hopeful that now that illegal immigration has essentially stopped, we can have a robust program of legal immigration and continue to benefit from those energetic folks around the world that want to move in. I've always said one of the easiest ways for us to hurt Russia and really do it at no pain to ourselves is let any skilled Russian that wants to come to America get a green card. So if you're a musician, artist, poet, bus driver, scientist, doctor, and you don't like what's going on in Russia and you want to come here, come on down. We've got room. We've got jobs. And, you know, we would benefit and Russia would be hurt at essentially no cost to us. So I'm hopeful that we will have a good pathway to legal immigration now that the border crisis is behind us.
But isn't that the kind of the best way for us to deal with China, too, to engage in economic credentialing as it relates to immigration, to to bring the best, the brightest, those that are not going to be, you know, a public charge to us, and strengthens our economy almost immediately?
Yeah. Oh, it would. And there are a number of Chinese that would love to be here in the U.S. And in fact, a number who got educations here in the U.S. that would like to stay. And it would really be to our benefit to work out a way for them to do that. You know, once again, we gain intellectual capital, we gain, you know, diversity and in viewpoints and thought at essentially no cost to us, because you set it up and say, look, if you come in under the legal immigration, it's not a welfare situation. You're not going to get, you know, a payment each month. You're not going to get free anything. You're just going to get an opportunity. And people that want to come to the U.S. would take that deal. They would be happy to have an opportunity to be here. And the fact that they're not getting a check is not going to bother them, because they're not looking for that. They're looking for an opportunity to work and an opportunity to have a better future.
Yeah, it's just kind of interesting how this whole thing has kind of blown up across the world. I was reading articles that Germany is coming with more restrictions. A lot of other countries are coming with more restrictions. Portugal, for example, they have identified tens of thousands of people that are there with expired visas and otherwise, and they've sent out a mass invitation to leave, or otherwise they're kicking you out of the country. Yeah. And it's interesting how all of this is kind of blowing up, and people are looking internally at themselves and, you know, what role do these people play? Are they a public charge? Is it in the best interest of the country or not? And they're really kind of ratcheting down on this issue. And it's interesting how it's all at the same time, right?
Well, and
right,
we got to get challenges.
Go ahead.
We'll get that when we come back.
All right. We'll visit that when we come back. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, you may have wanted to make a comment about what I was talking about with immigration kind of blowing up across the world right now.
Yeah, it's become a political issue. And one of the challenges, a lot of countries had just unchecked immigration without any plan. But it's important to step back. And University of Pennsylvania Wharton Business School did a study of the U.S. And we're now, if we have no immigrants, the average fertility rate per childbearing woman is 1.7. Replacement, just to stay even, is 2.1. That's 2.1 children per woman. So if we don't have people moving into the country from overseas, we will start shrinking as an economy. And it's really better for the U.S. if we have population growth between 2 and 3% every year. It just makes everything work better. You have a need for new houses, a need for new cars, a need for more stuff. If you have a shrinking population, it really presents a challenge. So getting this right is incredibly important. You know, step one is you eliminate the illegal, but step two is you have to have a pathway. Otherwise, our economy will start shrinking.
Well, so it would require then several, as if you had 3%, you're talking what, 6 million people?
Yeah. Now, there are 300 million Americans, so, you know, we need.
Okay, yeah.
We need probably, you know, 6 to 9 million net additions. And that can either come from people born in the U.S. or people that come in. And if you get them from around the world, it really provides tremendous diversity for the U.S. and helps our economy to be the most dynamic in the world.
But it really highlights the need, I think, for economic credentialing, because it's not just any person. Look, I'd love to be able to receive everyone. But that's not really in the best interest of us as citizens if you know, we're going to have folks that are going to fall into public charge. I mean, we have 40-something million people living below the federally identified poverty level now. We don't need more. We need less.
No.
And
but one
when
of
we
the
look
things
at this, the social service programs and what's driving you know, our debt structure that we have here in this country, you want producers, not consumers.
Well, you want people with a desire to work, and it's not all about just recruiting scientists. We need farm workers. We need people that, textile workers, people that will do daycare, teachers. So just a broad-based immigration program that is looking for people who want an opportunity. But the interesting thing is the second generation, once immigrants are here, the next generation tends to be much more productive. And we see that in New Orleans. We've got the perfect example with the Vietnamese influx. And now the second generation, you know, these are property owners, doctors, lawyers, professionals, started out as day laborers and fishermen, but a lot of energy, a lot of dynamism, and certainly made New Orleans better because of that influx. So even,
no doubt,
even
but when
low
I, when
skilled
I talk
immigrants
about,
are helpful.
When I talk about economic credentialing, basically what I'm talking about is a matrix. I mean, you definitely want to have a mix, but we don't even look at it that way, right?
Yeah.
We're kind of catch as can. That's not a good strategy. And it's not a strategy that I believe that this country can afford. And, you know, I love the folks that say, oh, well, we're the richest country in the world. Yeah, well, we won't be for long if we keep making stupid decisions about every policy that we implement here, right? I go back to these conversations that you and I have about cutting this budget and getting to a balanced budget is going to be painful, really painful for a lot of folks.
The one way to make it less painful is for the economy to grow more quickly. And I think doing immigration right, if we go back to an Ellis Island model, and I have family members that came through Ellis Island, you're bringing in farmers, factory workers, day workers, people that want to work, just stimulate the economy. So that mix from scientists down to daycare workers, we need everybody. And we have enough room to bring in, you know, several million a year. And that,
yeah,
I think that's the policy that would make sense.
But, I mean, we tend to put a certain gloss on Ellis Island, but there was a downside because we really didn't have a matrix then either, right? And the capacity at that point was far different than what it is today. And the benefits that we're willing to offer at that point were vastly different than they are today and what was available to people. So when we talk about the public charge then versus the public charge today, they're not even in the same stratosphere.
And no, in those days, there were no benefits. You arrived and you had to get a job. You instantly had to go to work or you weren't going to eat. And we can't be quite that severe, but...
No,
pushing toward people who want to work, I think, would really go a long way towards solving the problem. And it would help our economy grow, which solves the deficit problem.
No doubt. No doubt at all. And you're right. Expanding the economy is the fastest way to deal with it. And the faster you can do that, the better off you're going to be. We still left a couple of things on the table. Maybe we'll get to them next week. Definitely want to talk about student loan payments. That seems to be a hot topic issue. We run out of time.
Absolutely.
Visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great week.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's good to be with you.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us, and we'll check in with Scoot when we return. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
All right. Will your sons and daughters be called into action to land ashore at Greenland? We'll talk a little bit about that. A little bit of politics today, but a lot of other stuff to get to. We'll talk about Jazz Fest, and we'll review some of the funny stuff from Saturday Night Live.